Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Derek Mason, Braden Gall. Penny Hardaway making amends with Rick Barnes. We'll get to that coming up in a little bit. And could Joe Burrow have the greatest season in college football history? That is all coming up a little bit later on as well. Preds win last night 5-2. Wasn't pretty, but UC Saros played extremely well. Matias Ekholm jumps out of the sick bay, onto a plane, off the plane, into the rink, and into the net. They win 5-2. They play the Islanders again against Barry Trotz's guys tonight, pregame at 5, puck drop at 6. So, again, a little earlier start there. But now third win in 5 games. So, righting the ship again just a little bit. The ship changes directions a lot this time of year, Derek. So, the tiebreaker situation for the Tennessee Titans. This is as complicated as it gets. With 2 weeks to go in the season, sitting at 8-6, the Pittsburgh Steelers at 8-6 currently have a half game lead over the Tennessee Titans. The tiebreaker is conference record because they did not play head to head, which would be your number one tiebreaker. Your number two tiebreaker is AFC record. And right now the Pittsburgh Steelers sit at 6-4, the Titans sit at 6-5. So the half game record for the Steelers with the AFC mark is why the Steelers are the sixth seed right now and the Titans are the seventh seed. The Colts have been eliminated, so we take them out from their loss last night, which is actually a good thing. So it really does come down to, unless you're going to win both games and the Texans are going to lose both games, which I guess is possible, if that happens, then the Titans win the division.
Mm-hmm.
But let's take that off the table because that seems far-fetched and we sort of understand that. You win the division at 10-6, Houston be 9-7, that's it, end of discussion, Titans get a home playoff game. But let's go to the wild card tiebreaker, and this is where things get very, very complicated. So try to stay with me. I apologize. This is very complicated. If you want a place to read it all, I would recommend Music City Miracles. Mike Herndon did a great job with this, so go check it out. All right, number one tiebreaker for the Steelers and the Titans, head-to-head, didn't play, not applicable. Number two is going to be AFC record. Here's what happens, boys. If they both win both games and finish at 10-6, the Steelers have the tiebreaker because their AFC, they will be both the Jets and the Ravens, which is two more AFC wins, which keeps them ahead of the Titans in the AFC conference record tiebreaker. So again, the Titans can go 2-0, go 10-6, not win the division, and not get a wild card, which would suck for Titans fans. Now, if they go 9-7, and the Steelers go 1-1, obviously, because they're both AFC games, if the Titans go 9-7, and they go 1-1 over their last two, but the win is over the Saints,
mm-hmm.
they do not get in. The Steelers own the tiebreaker because the win over the Saints doesn't help them in their AFC record.
Exactly.
So the tiebreaker is the AFC record there, and then the Titans don't get in. The Steelers win. However, if the Titans finish 9-7, same exact record, but their win is over the Texans, that helps their AFC record, which then would tie them with the Steelers. So it would actually go to the fourth tiebreaker, which is strength of, excuse me, third tiebreaker is common opponent, which would at that point also beat dead even at 3-2, which means it goes to the fourth tiebreaker, which means it would be strength of victory, which is the number of wins that your opponents have that were common.
Sound like college football.
Yeah. So they would both be, they're currently both 3-2 against teams they both have played. Common opponents, 3-2. Well, the strength of that record, the strength of victory then comes down, and strength of victory is a really bizarre sort of tiebreaker. But just know this, the Titans own the strength of victory tiebreaker already. They've already clinched that because they have they have wins against teams with 50 wins, and the Pittsburgh Steelers have wins against far less than that. So just know that if it gets to strength of victory, the fourth tiebreaker, that the Titans win that one. So the Titans will win that tiebreaker, and that's what you have to get it to if you want to beat the Steelers. You have to get it to the fourth tiebreaker, which means you cannot go 1-1 and beat the Saints. You have to go 1-1 and beat the Texans. If you both go 0-2, Steelers and Titans, and you go 8-8, it goes to strength of victory again, and the Titans win that tiebreaker as well. So there are four scenarios left for the Titans. 2-0, 1-1, 1-1, and 0-2. There's four different paths for the Titans to the end of the season. Two of those paths end in the Steelers getting a tiebreaker, and two of those end in the Titans getting a tiebreaker. Now, if the Titans go 0-2 and the Steelers go 1-1, no tiebreakers, Steelers win, right?
Yeah.
Steelers go 0-2, Titans go 1-1, no tiebreakers.
Titans
get in. So we're only talking tiebreakers here, which is very complicated.
Yeah, first and foremost, they
just have a better record.
Just win the next two games, and then you got to hope for Pittsburgh to lose.
Right.
If you lose against the Saints, then you put the pressure. It's more added pressure. You got to hope then that Pittsburgh either lose to the Jets or lose to Baltimore. And the way things are trending, if Baltimore wins this week, then they're sitting everyone. I can't see John Harbaugh playing his starters against Pittsburgh in a meaningless game when they've already.
You don't think DP is going to call up old John and say, "Hey, John, can you help a brother out?
Can you please play? Can you please play everybody? Maybe not Lamar, but everybody else."
Dean's like, "Listen, y'all sucked Mariota 11 times last year. We know y'all are not scared of us, so just let us come into the playoffs, please."
Yeah, so they just gotta. They just need to hope that. Now, the best case scenario for them, obviously, is if they win this week, somehow, some way, Baltimore loses next week, then Baltimore, it's a must win for them against Pittsburgh Steelers.
Also, don't be like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are putting up video game numbers. The Texans are coming off. They have to play on Saturday. That game's on Saturday, Houston at Tampa. I don't know. You can tell me how much a one day, because the Saints are coming off a short week, too, quote unquote, short week. One less day for the Saints coming to Nashville, and one less day for the Texans going to Tampa Bay. I don't know if that's a factor, but if the Texans do lose, then that sets up a winner take all for the division in the final week of the season for the Titans as well. So there is, that's not far fetched. The Texans could go down to Tampa and lose because Jameis Winston's throwing for like 500 yards every single game. That's not out of the question either.
No.
So there are tons of paths for the Titans to get into the playoffs. Just know that they cannot control it themselves. They need help from other people. Adam wants to chime in. Adam, what's up?
What's up, man? So if the Texans win Saturday night, tell me if I'm wrong here. It's almost worth it to sit your players, right, and the Saints. Does that sound stupid? Like, the Texans are going to rest their players week 17. So we're more than likely we're going to win that game since we just went head-to-head against their starters. You don't want to get anybody hurt in the Saints game. Do I sound stupid saying that?
Adam, I love you. You're not stupid. I think you don't. Like, if Derrick Henry cannot produce, maybe you need to rest him. But I think the cleanest, simplest way to still do this is still go 2-0, win both games, and then all you need is the Bucs to beat the Texans or the Steelers to lose one game.
I think he was
easiest way to do it.
I think he was saying if the Texans win this week
on Saturday,
then
they got the division.
Yeah, they will sit their players. The Texans will sit their players.
2-0 is still going to give you a better chance to beat Steelers than
what he was saying is that if Texans sit their players, then it gives the Titans a better chance to win that last game. So they need, more importantly, they need to win this game. And then if the Texans sit their players, knowing that they already have it pretty much, they got their spot locked up.
Yeah, but then you're depending on the Steelers losing a game somewhere. If, again, assuming that results in a loss to the Saints. Again, we're going, this is lot. I know this is very complicated, but there are so many different ways this could work out. I still think the best way to do it is to win your two games.
Yeah, and hope that Pittsburgh
loses. And hope
lose.
Somebody else loses one game. And if that means Houston loses once to Tampa, you're in.
Yeah.
If Pittsburgh loses once to either the Jets or the Ravens, you're in. The simplest way to do this is win both your games and have one of those two things happen. Mm-hmm. All you need is one of those things to happen, which is the Bucks beating the Texans on Saturday, which you'll know when you go out on the field on Sunday against the Saints, mm-hmm. or the Steelers lose one out of two. And so that gives you three games. That's three possibilities that if you go 2-0 as the Titans, and that gives you three games where you just need one loss. And if you can get one loss from one of those three games and you go 2-0, you're in as either the division champ or the wild card.
Well, it would be really disappointing, I think, if the Titans can't finish this season off on a high note. Either way, whether they make it to the playoffs or not. Because if they lose their next three games.
You mean to finish the year?
Yeah, finish the year.
It's not going to sit well.
Yes, that even if they make the playoffs, unless they go on a run in the playoffs.
How ironic would it be that they made the switch to Tannehill and in the middle of the season the offense plays unprecedentedly well and they finish one game worse.
Yeah, one game worse. It just, you know, and this is what I was afraid
the NFL,
of.
Man.
This is what I was afraid of with this team and this schedule. Because the three teams that they end the season with are three playoff teams. And they can play that well. They were the hottest team in the NFL. And they could still lose the last three games and go 8-8.
It's crazy.
They can make the playoffs with 8-8, but so, then they'll also obviously not make the playoffs. And that would be really disappointing.
I totally agree. But I think there would be some optimism around Tannehill because they have a difficult decision to do. And if Tannehill wants to shop his services, he can do that. Mm-hmm. They can just tag him and franchise him for a year, and they can guarantee that they have control over Tannehill for at least two more years if they want him to. If they want him to be their starter and they're willing to pay him franchise tag money, they can control him for two more years. I think let's entertain what Adam's saying, though, mm-hmm. and that is that the Texans beat the Buccaneers on Saturday and clinched mm-hmm. the division. It's very possible that that happens. That does set up a situation where you can't win the division, and your win against the Texans looks a little easier because the Texans – again, if the Chiefs were to win, they can't change their spot in the pecking order. They can only play – they're only going to be the four seed. The question I have about that is then the Texans, going into Week 17, might be able to choose their opponent to mm-hmm. some degree.
Yeah.
They could have – if they tank the game and they bench all their players going into Week 17 against the Titans, they might have to then host the Titans the very next week in back-to-back weeks. It's unlikely – But the Titans are probably going to end up going to Kansas City. Mm-hmm. But do they want to – if the Chiefs were to lose and there's a chance that they could win the game and maybe jump the Chiefs, then maybe they can control their opponent. It's not far-fetched that the Texans clinch the division on Saturday, beat the Buccaneers, and that they rest everybody in Week 17, and you're given that AFC win if you're the Titans. Then the Saints game doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But then you also need the Steelers to lose a game, one of the two games.
I think best case scenario is that Pittsburgh lose a game.
That's what you need.
Pittsburgh lose a game, and you hope it's this game against the Jets. But they need to lose a game.
You say that because you assume Baltimore's going to rest all their players.
Baltimore's going to win this weekend, and they're going to rest all of their players. So you hope that the loss is this week versus the Jets, because them beating a Baltimore team that is playing with their second and third stringers, I mean, if you lose to them, then you don't deserve to play in the playoffs.
I'm still shocked that the Steelers are where they are right now.
It's a testament to Mike Tomlin. Yeah. Whoever didn't think Mike Tomlin was a good coach, you might rethink what you thought about Mike Tomlin.
I want to revisit the Terrell Suggs issue. Should the Titans have made a claim on Terrell Suggs? I want to get to that question when we return. This is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Has the power dynamic, college basketball power dynamic in the state between Memphis and Penny Hardaway and Tennessee and Rick Barnes changed now that Saturday took place? Penny Hardaway had some interesting thoughts after the game. We will play those for you coming up next segment. NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame shows. Start your morning off with the kickoff from 7 to 9:30 a.m., followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders, live from George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. prior to the Titans taking on the New Orleans Saints. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesale Link, powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. Again, the Titans can go 2-0, 10-6, and miss the playoffs. They can go 0-2 and go 8-8 and make the playoffs. So literally everything is on the table. The Texans game in Week 17 feels like the most important game. If you can go 1-1, but you beat the Texans, all you need is a Steelers loss along the way, and you win. You could win the division, but you likely are going to win the wild card. So we'll continue that conversation as trying to explain that to people. I know it's complicated. Terrell Suggs was claimed off waivers. Now, he was claiming he's playing for the Arizona Cardinals. I'm not sure if anybody noticed this year. He said he wasn't going to go to any team unless it was the Ravens, so don't claim me. The Titans didn't claim him, but the Chiefs did, and we're going to see how this plays itself out. There is some I don't like this idea that Terrell Suggs is probably going to change somebody's world. I don't think that happens. But if it is going to happen and it is going to be effective, wouldn't you think that playing for Dean Pease in this system, in a team that desperately needs a little extra pass rush over the final 2 weeks, was it a mistake for the Tennessee Titans not to put in a waiver claim at least and test the waters and talk to Terrell Suggs about coming to Nashville and seeing if it's something he'd be interested in doing?
They probably had discussions with him. Maybe Dean Pease had an opportunity to talk with Terrell Suggs. But I don't know if again, and we discussed this, I don't know if Terrell Suggs would have been the guy that would have, you know, changed things for the Tennessee Titans. Would he have made that much of an impact on the Tennessee Titans? To whereas, you know, they became all of a sudden this, you know, this defensive line that was getting to the quarterback. If you get a, you know, 30-year-old Terrell Suggs, 31-year-old Terrell Suggs, yes. But Terrell is, what, 35, 36 years old, somewhere around there?
What does he have left?
And he's been injured. Now, he keeps himself in good condition, but, I mean, Father Time just catches up with you. And you know, there's a reason why, you know, Baltimore released him and then the Cardinals released him because he wasn't the Terrell Suggs that we were accustomed to seeing for many years. And I don't know if bringing him here to Nashville, even if it's Dean Pease, I don't know how much that's going to change your defense. Now I can see if the Titans had injuries across the board and they needed somebody.
Well, they can't, but they, you know, but they do need a pass rush.
Yeah, but I mean, how much will Terrell Suggs change?
I mean, I'm with you.
Yeah, how much will he? Are they going to all of a sudden, you know, get three or four extra sacks this season? I don't know. Maybe not.
More than likely not.
Yeah.
Now, what adding Tremaine Brock has done though is it shows you that at least John Robinson is got his eyes clearly trained on the waiver wire, and they're clearly going out to get pieces that they think can help them win.
Uh-huh.
And they went out and got Tremaine Brock, and you know, whatever, he's been fine. It is what it is. It's a waiver wire claim in week 14 or whatever it was. And so it's clear. It's not like he just, I mean, John Robinson isn't just ignoring ways to get his, make his team better. So what fans need to understand is that he's clearly doing everything he can possibly do. And if they believe that Terrell, if he and Dean Pease and Mike Vrabel believe that that Terrell Suggs was a way for them to make their team better, and that Terrell Suggs was interested in coming here, it would have happened. But it didn't, and they passed. We have to, at this point, just trust them. The problem with that is that in the special teams world, we have just trusted them to handle it, and it's terrible right now, outside of Brett Kern.
Yeah, there's not many. Maybe they made a mistake by, you know, activating suck-up too soon. And they, it's a tricky situation because before the injury, Suckup was a good kicker. And they thought that, you know, him coming back and him being healthy, that he still would be that kicker. But obviously he's not. You can see that he doesn't have the confidence that he had prior to his injury. Can they do something about it now? Probably not. I'm with Floyd. You know, you bring in a guy and say he misses a PAT or he misses a 35, 40-yard field goal. What are you going to do, cut him? You're going to just keep on. It's going to be this carousel of things.
Right.
You know, you stick with Suckup and you just hope that you're not in a position to need him to kick a 45-yard field goal with 30 seconds left to win you a football game. If you do the things prior to that, then you're not going to need that. They're doing well in a passing game. They're doing well in a run game. Their defense, there's a lot of pressure on their defense now because of the injuries in the back end. Now those guys have to get to the quarterback, and they're not doing it. So Dean is going to have to, you know, generate pass rush. But he can't do it because he can't blitz Logan Ryan. Because he's the only healthy starter you have out there.
Who normally is a pretty good blitzer.
Exactly. He's normally the guy that you do the blitzing with. Now you can't blitz him.
Yeah. I think you're going to need to get creative with the Jayon Browns, Rashawn Evans of the world. You're going to have to play some interesting coverages. And, you know, whether you're, you know, at one point you're just double teaming DeAndre Hopkins last week. And
for the most part, you kept him out of the game until you had to do something different.
Until the game was on the line, and then you couldn't. Because, again, also, Deshaun, here's the one thing that gives me hope, and am I wrong for this giving me hope? You guys, you can tell me if I'm wrong. Again, you can text in 615-737-1025, and Derek, you never hesitate to tell me when you think I'm wrong, which is okay. That's why I love you. I just think that getting home, quote-unquote getting home on the blitz, on pressure, the standard pass rush, whatever, I think that is just... I think it's significantly more difficult on Deshaun Watson. I know he holds the ball for longer, but it's because he can evade and avoid your hits and your tackles. I feel like if they play exactly the same way that they did last week, it may not be a lot more pressure on Drew Brees, but it will be more. Am I wrong for thinking that because he's a little bit more stationary, that maybe, just maybe one or two of those plays gets home and that affects the outcome of the game?
Well, in theory, yes. But because Drew Brees gets the ball away very quickly, their passing game is all about timing. Because Drew Brees is under 6 foot, Sean Payton has done an excellent job at getting the ball out of his hands very quickly. That's why they go a lot of 3 and 4 wides, because they want him to get the ball out of his hand quickly. When he doesn't, then you got an opportunity to get your hands up. Collapse the pocket.
The 49ers got pressure with those four. But now they scored a bunch of points still.
But in theory, what you're saying is correct. But if it wasn't Drew Brees, if this was somebody else, then yeah, it'd work out perfectly. But because it's Drew Brees, Sean Payton, and the way they run that offense, they get the ball out of his hands very quickly. And no matter if you – only thing you can do as a defense, if you're not getting the pass rush – you know, that the 49ers got, is that you get your hands up. You know, you don't get to the quarterback, but you get your hands up.
The only reason they were in the game was Jeffrey Simmons got his hands up at the goal line, knocked the ball up into the air, and Jayon Brown went up and got it and saved the day, which turned into 7 points the other direction. So,
and that's what Dean Pete's got to be saying this week. Right. If you don't get to him, which probably more than likely you won't, because we can't press the receivers like we want to, because we got one starter.
And you know, as a defensive lineman, that right off the snap, whether or not you've won or not, right? Like, you know, as a defensive tackle, if you're Casey or Simmons, you know in the first half a second whether or not you beat your guy. And if you beat your guy, you're shoving him back into the pocket.
Of course.
Or you've gotten around him. So it doesn't take long to realize, I better get my hands up because I got stonewalled, right? Like, yeah. I didn't win this battle. I need to try another way to affect the game. And so that defensive linemen know all about that stuff. It can happen that quickly when you're a defensive lineman. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. We'll continue talking Titans coming up next hour. However, Penny Hardaway changed his tune, and I think it affects the power dynamic between Memphis and Tennessee as far as the future of the rivalry. I think there's pressure on a new person now. We'll explain. We'll let you decide. You can listen to Penny Hardaway when we return. This is Morning Drive. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Man, listen, check it out. I've been telling you this for over a year now about my friends over at Cool Springs MD. Over the years, more men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, his wife Daphne, and that experienced and wonderful staff will give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. Cool Springs MD services have already helped many men. Brentwood, Nashville, Franklin, and the surrounding areas here in Tennessee with improving their immune system. It's getting cold, man. We tend to get a little sick. Energy levels, cognitive functions, and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And when we are healthier and our lives are more enriched, then everyone else around us feels better. And things tend to work as they should in our world. And there's no better time now to achieve that type of lifestyle. What are you waiting on, man? Pick up your cell phones, pick up a pen, pencil, do whatever you need to do. Write it down. Here's the number, because you need to make this appointment today, not tomorrow, but today. Here's the number, 615-486-3458. That's 615-486-3458. Or visit the website, CoolSpringsMD.com.
Man, unbelievable game, young team. Knew we were going to have our hands full coming into this building, especially about how the game went last year. And to bring a young team, two starters down into an environment like this, didn't know how they were going to respond. We started off slow and kind of fought back into the game and took the lead at half and kind of calmed the guys down and basically stuck with our game plan on Lamonte and Jordan, and it worked, man. I mean, those are two terrific players, two senior guards. To have them shoot like this, I don't think they'll ever shoot like this again in their career. But it just, everything worked in our favor. We tried to make everything hard for those two guys, because we knew that they were the guys that were going to, if they were going to win, it was going to be through those two guys. So just really proud of my team for sticking to the game plan.
Really interesting comments there from Penny Hardaway about the Tennessee Volunteers, how they win games and how you're going to beat them. No surprise, if you stop their two veteran guards, Turner and Bowden, you're gonna win games.
Yes.
Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on Morning Drive. And so obviously, just first before we get to Penny Hardaway's comments about how all of last year's drama took place, he and Rick Barnes had a long conversation at half court before the game. So there's a lot to discuss here about the power dynamic and the future of this rivalry, which I think is critically important. Again, how many times would we be doing a college basketball segment in the middle of December? Memphis and Tennessee is special. It's big. Mm-hmm. It's bigger than any other non-conference basketball game either of those two teams will play, and it is great for this state. So will the rivalry continue? Did Penny say enough to help that rivalry continue? But your thoughts quickly on how both teams played. It was not a pretty game.
No, it wasn't. It was, it was more so a defensive game. And you didn't think that, considering, who Tennessee has and what their backcourt looks like, you felt that Memphis was going to be, them scoring was going to be a little bit harder because they didn't have James in their lineup, and they hadn't had him for a while. But you just thought that UT, with their backcourt, a veteran backcourt, that they were going to be able to score some points. And you heard Penny say it. He don't think those two guys will ever in their career, they got a year left in their career, shoot the way that they did against Memphis. And that's surprising about it, is that those two guys shot so poorly. It was a defensive game, and they made it hard for those two guys to get their shot off. I was surprised that it was that low scoring. I really was.
It was ugly. It was ugly. Now, listen, tense young team, undisciplined team without their best players for Memphis, that's what can happen. So this was Penny Hardaway when asked about the general vibe of the rivalry and Rick Barnes and he going back and forth last year. If you missed the story, of course, Penny taking some shots at Rick Barnes and sort of stirring things up a little bit in the state, ruffling Tennessee and Rick Barnes' feathers after the way the game ended last year with a little bit of controversy. And I'm not really sure any of us fully still understand 100% what actually happened at the end of that game. But you heard him reference it there. This was Penny Hardaway's, when asked about all of this, this was Penny Hardaway's response.
I mean, obviously, man, I know last year what I said after Coach Barnes, press conference or whatever happened. When I read those statements today, it kind of made me cringe a little bit. So I kind of understood what was going to happen, because I felt like it got misunderstood. But then when I read it, it wasn't a good look. And he and I talked about a little bit at half court, and, that'll never happen again.
To me, just me, you guys, Tennessee fans, and everybody else out there has got to make up their own mind on this. But to me, that is Penny Hardaway trying to bury the beef, man. He's trying to end the beef. He's saying, listen, I cringed when I heard it. I read it, and it's not a good look. You won't hear that from me again. I've talked to Rick Barnes about it. To me, hatchet is buried. To me, it's done, and that means there are no more excuses for this game not to continue. And I wonder if that puts the pressure on Tennessee and Rick Barnes to decide, yes, we need to keep this series going, because it certainly benefits Memphis more than Tennessee from a resume strength of schedule standpoint. To me, is that enough, Derek, in your mind, to for the hatchet to be buried and for this whole thing to be done with and say, you know what, let's do what's best for the state of basketball in the state of Tennessee?
I think it does. I think Penny understands that now that he's a year seasoned in this at being a college coach, he understands things you can't say, things you can say, things that you might look at as being okay, but then if it was said to you, would you take it the same way? He said he looked at those quotes and it made him cringe. He was like, okay, I understand why,
right?
Rick Barnes, you know.
And Tennessee fans, Tennessee fans were upset.
Yeah. I could see why. It will never happen again. He's trying to build a good rapport with this. He wants to build that rivalry back up, because right now it benefits Memphis. But if Memphis continues to, you know, do what they have been doing, they continue to get the recruits in, it's going to benefit both programs. Because if you have a Memphis team that is, you know, say for the next, you know, 3-4 years, 5 years, they're a top 15 team. Well, that helps UT in that out of conference strength of schedule.
But they don't need it, though.
They don't need it, but what I'm saying is that
that's the argument Tennessee fans would make, is that we don't need it because we play in a Power 5 league with the SEC. We play an SEC schedule, and we're going to have enough wins on our resume that we don't need to give you a chance to beat us and maybe win some recruiting battles or whatever.
But if this is a – that's like saying, you know, I don't need to play Duke because I'm in the Big Ten. Well, maybe not, but really you do, because if you beat Duke, then – It's a notch on your belt. If you lose to them, it's still, hey, I'm not ducking anybody. We're playing the top notch teams. We're playing teams that a lot of teams are trying to avoid.
But Memphis getting wins over SEC teams, especially good SEC teams, uh-huh, like Tennessee is right now. Memphis doesn't play in a conference, uh-huh, where you're going to get a bunch of great wins during the regular season. When you play in the AAC, mm-hmm, who are you going to beat? Cincinnati?
But as long as Memphis Temple is playing a really good out-of-conference, and then come the end of the year and they see UT play Memphis, and say if UT beats Memphis, well, it's going to work to UT's advantage because now they've beaten a top 10 team.
So, yeah, I totally follow you.
So I think and you're right. It's more beneficial to Memphis,
yes,
but I still do believe it does benefit
now,
UT.
Here's the thing. If Penny Hardaway is going to drum up drama and make it controversial and maybe say some things that are a little out of line, mm-hmm, then it's easy for me to side with Rick Barnes,
exactly,
in Tennessee and say, don't schedule Memphis. Even though as a state of basketball fan who lives in Tennessee, I want to see the game because it's great for the state.
Exactly.
It's great for everyone in the state who's a fan of either team or a fan of just college basketball, or just a sports fan. It's great for everyone in the state for this game to happen, period. Now, if I'm Rick Barnes and I'm Tennessee, and all that I'm going to get is a bunch of is Penny Hardaway running his mouth and saying weird stuff and, mm-hmm, kind of poking the bear and being sort of juvenile about the whole thing, then I understand if I'm Rick Barnes in Tennessee saying, "Nah, we're good, dude. We're, mm-hmm, we're good. We got an SEC schedule. Well, we're going to play a bunch of top 100 teams. We're going to build a resume that's just fine without you, and we don't need to really play you anymore." Mm-hmm. But if Penny's going to come out and say, "Look, man, my bad. Mm-hmm. That was cringeworthy. It's not going to happen again. It's a bad look," and he's going to be cool about it, he's going to be classy about it, and it turns into a classy rivalry, mm-hmm, then I think there's less reason for Tennessee fans to say, "Man, I'm done with you, Memphis." To me, I think it's a big deal that Penny Hardaway did what he did.
Just admit
that he's grown up in a year and, mm-hmm, say, hey, I wouldn't do that again. That was a mistake by me. I hope, you know. And to me, that opens the door for the rivalry to continue, because now Tennessee fans can't say, oh, he's just trying to be a punk.
Because, uh-huh,
he's not. He said, listen, I made a mistake. I'm wrong. My bad.
This is what you want this game to become. Not just, you know, a game that's recognized here in Tennessee, not just a game that's recognized in the South. You want this game to be recognized,
right?
You know, like the Michigan State Duke, Kentucky Duke Kentucky, Kansas.
Kentucky, Indiana?
Kentucky, Indiana. You wanted to, when it comes on a Saturday, everybody's watching it. That's how you want it to, that's what you want it to become.
How many games, and we obviously love the Battle for the Boulevard, Belmont, and Lipscomb in this city, but this doesn't really extend outside of the city, maybe to the region, but how many times does this state, this is a football-crazed state that loves football. They care about football more than anything else, NFL, college football. And when you live in a football-crazed state, you have to fight and claw to get access to college basketball. It's not like the Preds. The Preds have a ton of interest.
Exactly.
College basketball just doesn't. And so for them to have a tentpole event where they can say every December, early in December every year, Memphis and Tennessee are going to play 1 year in Memphis, the next year in Knoxville, and the third year in Nashville.
That'd be great.
Like they're doing next year. If you do that, and every 3 years it rotates throughout the state, it would be amazing. It would give everybody something to look forward to, no matter how good the teams are. And but what you have to have is people being respectful of each other.
Exactly.
You can't have one guy, you know, saying a bunch of stupid stuff, and the other guy, you know, Rick Barnes has obviously got a very interesting sense of humor. He's a funny dude, but like that's not gonna, he's not gonna laugh about that stuff. Why would I play you if you're just gonna say a bunch of crap about my team all the time? So, but now that he's put that aside and he's buried the hatchet, I don't think there's an excuse for Rick Barnes and Tennessee not to say, all right, let's play this game.
No, there's no excuse. I think you, from this point on, you try to create that rivalry again. You try to make this, whatever you want to call it, you know, I don't know what you call a rivalry, but whatever you call it, you want to create it to whereas it's not, again, it's not just big here, but it becomes a national thing. It's the game that's on Saturday at you know, noon, or Saturday at 3,
right,
that everybody's watching it. We're getting it up north. We're getting it down south. We're getting it on the East Coast. They're playing this game rather than playing maybe another game. Just like they're trying to drum up the, you know, the Syracuse and Georgetown rivalry again.
Good.
Things like that.
Great.
Yeah, it's great for college basketball.
Yeah, I agree. And so I thought it was a really smart move by Penny Hardaway to just say, look, man, my bad. I screwed that up. You're not going to hear it again. I've talked to Rick Barnes about it. Let's move forward. I think it's a super smart move, and it shows maturity as a coach from Penny. And I think it's good for the state if we can get this thing signed up long term. I just wanted to point that out because I thought that was pretty interesting after the game. Joe Burrow won the Heisman. I gave you guys, you know, Joe Rexford was on yesterday. We gave you our ballots yesterday. But what we have not talked about is where would Joe Burrow rank historically if he finishes the job and wins two more games? And they go 15-0, and LSU is the national champs with a Heisman Trophy. Where would this season for Joe Burrow rank historically? No hyperbole. Honest question. Where would this season rank amongst the greatest of all time? We'll discuss when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Mercury is in retrograde again. I had to look that up, figure out what Mercury being in retrograde means.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't get that either.
Exactly.
I was just going to keep
Mercury in retrograde.
So the name of the song is Mercury, and the first line of the chorus is Mercury is in retrograde again, which is a term when Mercury's going so fast around the sun that it looks like it's going backwards from planet Earth. See? You learned something on the show.
Oh, wow.
There Nerd alert. Yeah.
That blew my mind.
It's
right
an
there.
Artist's way of saying Ish is way backwards today. It's basically what he's saying. Everything looks backwards today.
Yeah.
Mercury must be in retrograde again. It means, like, the world's going crazy, I guess. Just listen to Sturgill. You'll understand. It's totally easy to get. Not psychedelic at all. At 1025 underscore MD, at 1025 underscore MD, worst Christmas cooking experience, Twitter contest, winner at the end of the show will get a $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. So make sure you tweet us the disaster cooking experience that you went through on Christmas at 1025 underscore MD, but it's got to be through the Twitter account. So shoot us a tweet there and tell us about a bad holiday cooking experience. And if things went totally bonkers for you, maybe we can help you out and give you a $100 gift card a little bit later on. So Joe Burrow wins the Heisman Trophy. His team is number one in the nation. He has set every single passing record under the sun in the SEC. It is the greatest single passing season by a quarterback in the history of SEC football. He has not lost a game. He's beaten top 10 opponent with huge moments and huge performances all season. He is the runaway, most successful, most dominant Heisman Trophy winner of all time. Those are facts. Can't argue with any of those things. Those aren't my opinions. Those are facts.
You're
right. If they beat Oklahoma and then beat either Ohio State or Clemson in the national title game and go 15-0 with what, I mean, if he goes for 400 and 400, you're talking about almost 6,000 yards of offense. 6,000 yards of offense. Good He's already Lord. Over 50 touchdowns total for the season.
Mm-hmm.
15-0 with a Heisman Trophy, with the national championship, with the statistical records, and he has got he doesn't have a single blemish on his resume off the field, right? He's uh-huh. He's the perfect child. He's the perfect teammate. He's the perfect student. He's the perfect everything, right? He's perfect. Is it the best single season by a quarterback in college football history? And I'm not a prisoner of the moment. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. I think you could argue that if Joe Burrow wins two more games, it is the greatest season by a quarterback ever. And before you tell me Vince Young or Deshaun Watson or Tim Tebow, none of those three guys won a national championship in the same year that they won the Heisman. Deshaun and Vince didn't win the Heisman. Tim Tebow won a national title in 09 or 08, won the Heisman in 07, and was a backup in 06 and then lost to Bama in 09. Cam Newton in 2010 comes to mind.
Yeah.
Heisman Trophy, perfect record, carried his team to a national championship. Jameis Winston did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Leinart did it in 04, national title and undefeated record and Heisman Trophy. There's not many guys that are on that list. Could you make the case that this would be the best season ever by a quarterback, single season by a quarterback?
Yeah, because, I mean, whether it's Vinny Testaverde, Danny Warfolk, Troy Smith had a really good season.
And got smoked in the national title.
Yeah, got beat in the national championship. Charlie Ward.
That's a good one.
A really good season because he was the dual threat quarterback. They won a national championship that year. He won Heisman, right?
Was it 93?
I think so. You know, you might be...
Joe Burrow's number. Now, you have to take into account the evolution of the game. Yeah. And so the numbers are bigger than they used to be. So I get that.
Absolutely. Doug Flutie.
But
they didn't win a national.
No.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Cam Newton is the only guy that comes to mind that like single-handedly carried his team.
I would have said Marcus, but they didn't win a national championship that year.
And they didn't go undefeated either. Yeah. But you're right. He got Oregon to the national title game, which is an accomplishment all unto itself. I just think when you have you're number one in the nation, you have a perfect record. And, again, the most – like it's the biggest victory in Heisman history. Like, he crushed every other human being on the planet when he won. Cam Newton's the only one that I can think of.
Jameis Winston?
Winston is another one. Heisman undefeated and national title. But Winston had major off the field questions.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was about to say. It's hard to kind of separate. I kind of put Cam Newton and Jameis Winston in a category by themselves, and I think Joe Burrow is in a category with maybe Matt Leinart. But the only reason why I don't give Matt Leinart that nod is because he had Reggie Bush. He had Lindell White.
That team was loaded.
Like, the list goes on and on of how many players he had on this team. This is a team of pretty much a bunch of guys who got together. I mean, going into the season, I don't think Justin Jefferson was a first-round projection that he is now. You know, same thing for, you know, the running backs and, you know, all this.
Oh, I disagree. This is a pretty good LSU roster.
I know, yeah, but
Bama fan.
Well, I mean, no, but I'm just saying, compared to the rest of those teams, like, going into the season, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Lindell White, all those guys were solidified. These guys weren't.
Sure.
These guys are, you know, unknown to the national perspective.
Right,
and
but they've got
now
the
all
best,
of a sudden they are.
But they got the best safety in America. Mm-hmm. They've got the best freshman corner in America. They've got the best receiver in America because he won the Biletnikoff.
Hell, they got
Chase
three
did.
Of the best top three of the best six or seven receivers in the country.
I mean, I get
but,
your,
but
your
going
point
in,
is
but
they
going
weren't
into
going
the season.
In, but who cares about what they were doing going into the season? Like, what does it matter? All that matters is how good are. Like, they were preseason top 10 LSU. I think Auburn is the exception here. Auburn is the one that didn't have a single receiver play in the NFL, didn't have a single running back play in the NFL, had like one offensive lineman play in the NFL. Like, to me, Auburn's roster was significantly worse than this LSU roster or that USC roster. Your point about USC is totally valid, Marquise. Like, that is one of the most loaded teams ever. So I don't even consider Matt Leinart. I don't even consider Leinart. But I also know that Joe Burrow is a more talented player than Matt Leinart. Like, he's a better physical athlete. But I think you can't rip on LSU's quote-unquote roster, though. Like,
but no, I'm not ripping on their roster. What I'm saying is
Vince might have been the best most unstoppable player ever.
I'm not ripping on the roster because I know the roster because we cover SEC here. Sure. But I'm talking about from a national perspective, everybody gave the best quarterback nod to Tua. Everybody gave the best wide receiver core to Alabama. Everybody gave, you know, the best sure. defense to Clemson or somebody else. The LSU sure. didn't get any of those nods from a national perspective. So that's what I mean by these guys are just coming in all together, and all of a sudden now on a national perspective, these guys are getting all this love, and that's what makes this season so special. And the leader of the pack is Joe Burrow.
I do believe, okay. Okay. And again, you don't want to be a prisoner of the moment. But
I'm trying not to be.
If you look at what Joe Burrow has done, what this team has done, how this offense has just been virtually unstoppable. Their defense have played a lot better now that they've gotten healthy. If they finish the season off with beating, say, Clemson and Oklahoma and then Clemson, or Oklahoma and Ohio State, you would have to consider this team one of the greatest teams of all time.
Yeah.
And Joe Burrow, one of the greatest, having one of the greatest quarterback seasons of all time, because he would have won the Heisman and the national championship. And look at the numbers that he put up. Now, again, I understand that because offenses have changed, you know, back in
sure, you're not
going to
throw for 5,000.
Exactly.
Although the guy with the most yards ever for a Heisman is actually Ty Detmer.
Yeah, Ty threw for a bunch. But in that system, yards. They were throwing the ball before people even thought about throwing it in college.
Way ahead of their time.
Exactly.
For sure. I just start looking at the numbers. And Cam, I think, again, I just think if you told me to pick two, I would say Cam Newton in 2010. And again, you have to, Joe Burrow has to finish it with two mm-hmm. wins for them to be in the conversation. But they're number one, mm-hmm. and they're a heavy favorite over Oklahoma. I would guess they if they get to the national title game, and the game is in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Also, the most dominant Heisman voting of all time. He broke every single record for the Heisman voting, which
it
means
it wasn't even close. It shouldn't have been close.
And it shouldn't have been close. He's broken every single record statistically. Uh-huh. He's won every single game. Like, there's literally nothing on the resume that's missing, including the fact that he is like this beloved human being by everyone who's ever met him.
Well, the only thing that's missing is the national championship.
So if he finishes the deal with the Natty,
uh-huh.
and he's 15-0, there's not and he's the number one pick in the draft. He's checked every. There's literally nothing else for him to accomplish.
I don't think if that indeed happens, you look at what he did over the course of the season, how efficient he was as a quarterback, you know, his big plays that he made throughout the season against the competition that he had to play against, top ranked defense in Auburn, top ranked defense in Georgia. He's played some really good defenses and has performed to a level that many didn't think you could perform to. If you take all of that into account, and if he wins the national championship, any other argument beside his argument when in regards to quarterbacks, now you can say just players, but in regards to quarterbacks winning a Heisman and a national championship,
there's no
argument. I mean, he would have had the greatest season of any quarterback in college modern day history. If you look at the numbers, him winning the Heisman,
he's completing 78% of his passes against SEC defenses. He's got 50 touchdowns, 51 touchdowns. He's tied right now with Lamar Jackson and Tim Tebow and Kyler Murray for the second most touchdowns passing and rushing in a single season. He's got over 5,000 yards of total offense. Over 5,000 yards, and he could have two more games to go.
People are going to argue. You can see it right now, Tim Tebow. People are going to argue Tim Tebow up and down.
And I'm fine with the career. Tim Tebow's career is better, but he did not win the Heisman the same year he won the national title. He didn't put it all together in 1 year. And again, that may be semantic. Now that raises another question: do you have to win a championship as a team mm-hmm. to be considered individually great? And, you know, Michael Vick in 99 was individually spectacular and almost brought them back from the dead against Florida State in the national title game. Vince Young didn't win the Heisman, mm-hmm. but it's hard to argue that undefeated Texas team and his performance in that particular season, again, he's the most unstoppable player I've ever seen mm-hmm. in college football. One guy, Vince Young.
Yeah.
But we're sort of, these are slightly different arguments, right?
Like exactly.
Better season versus better athlete versus most unstoppable player versus,
but
you know,
if you
just,
take,
there's subtle differences.
But if you take the Heisman, national championship, and number one team at the end.
And every single record statistically.
Every single record for a season. You take Joe Burrow and stack him up to any other quarterback that has won the Heisman National Championship in one season. We're not talking about a career.
Yeah.
One season, it's hard to argue that he's not the best.
Cam is the only one I think you could argue. He was also suspended because he was embroiled in a scandal.
Yeah.
And you're telling me Mississippi State offered you $180,000 and you just went to Auburn for free? Come on now. Come on now.
He took a pay cut his first
year.
You're
asking me to believe that? At the end of the 30 for 30, he's just like smiling. He's like, somebody asked him, I think, at the end of the 30 for 30, like, you think anybody's ever going to find out what really happened? He just smiled. He's like, I don't know, man.
Well, no, ask my outfits that I'm buying with that same check.
just wanted to throw it out there. It's just a little food for thought for you guys today. Now, he's still got to win two games, so we'll see. After a fantastic weekend winning the Heisman Trophy. Preds, not a great weekend, but a great Monday night and a great start to their week. They're back on the ice tonight. We'll tell you what happened last night and what does it mean tonight. Looking forward for the Preds right here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.